to pay for a franchise with the city in order to have the right to make that money. The city would get a portion of that. So if you think about cable, they're making about $2 billion a year in New York City. And the way that they operate is by operating on publicly owned land. And so they pay a percentage of what they make in order to both support community media and into the city general fund. But now, a lot of subscribers have moved from standard cable to paying for streaming services, but we don't receive any funding from that. The city also doesn't receive funding for that. Funding that goes for whether it's the police or networking between city facilities or asphalt, whatever the city wants. In order to make up for that loss of funding, since the streaming is actually still going through the same wire and it's still going through the same public ground, we are proposing a tax statewide on streaming services so that that money can, again, go to support community media or the general fund for the cities that they're collecting for.
That's the question that I had for you. In Troy, New York, where the Sanctuary for Independent Media is, who I'm representing here, they collect the franchise fee and they put it in the general fund. Is there anything in this new proposed legislation that would require municipalities to put it to community media?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question. It's almost like you read the bill. We were thinking particularly of Troy, where we know that you have a very robust community media center that's not operating through the city. It's not operating with city funds directly. So in the case of, say, Brooklyn, where there is like a public access, educational access, and government access facilities, a certain amount of the money, about 2%, there's 5% is what's being asked for total, but about 2% of that would go to the community media center in Brooklyn. In the case of Troy, if there's not a formal community media center like that, these funds would go into a fund that would be administered, we think, maybe by NISCA or something like that, and it would be available in grant form to community media centers that operate independently, like the one in Troy.
So this is a part of the bill. If the franchise money is not used for media, it would go to the NISCA. Yeah,
well, that's what we propose. We're not sure how the state will do it, but what we did propose was that for municipalities, a lot of smaller ones in particular, that don't have a public education or government access center, they would be eligible to apply through NISCA or some other state agency to have support for whatever they thought was important in terms of community media. So it could be an independent art center. It could be a media center like the one in Troy. It could be, you know, who knows? It could be arts education, you know, media education in the schools. It would depend on the local municipality. But that money would be earmarked for something related to community media.
So I can't wait till the folks in Troy look at this legislation and say, you're taking my general fund money for media?
No, well, actually, it's not that at all. It's just the opposite. If this passes, the majority of the money still goes into the general fund. It's just if you want to be eligible for the community media part of it, you would not be able to put that in the general fund. So that's an additional part.
I'm still a little confused.
So picture $1. Let's say you collected $1. 20 cents of that would go directly to the state for the administration of the program, because, of course, they have to figure out what all the taxes are and so forth. 40 cents of that would go to the municipality where the taxes were paid. And 40% of that would go to community media funding. If you were in a city that didn't have a formal public education or government center, then you could apply for a grant out of the pooled 40% statewide, and that would be earmarked strictly for community media funding. Although, you know, I have been talking with some of the really rural representatives who, you know, frankly, having a community media center might not be their main interest, and their interest might be in making sure that there's cell tower coverage, for instance, or that there's broadband going to everybody's home. You know, it's a lot more basic there. And we think that that's still an equity issue. You know, there's, you know, just like the community voice and community media is an equity issue, you know, that people need to have a voice in determining the conversation around their own communities. And that's why community media is important. In some smaller rural places where there's only, say, 6 homes per mile, a community media center might not be as important as making sure that everybody has access to either broadband or even cell tower coverage. I was talking with one representative earlier today about the tragic situation where there was a young lady in a car with several other people. You may have heard of it. And they drove into the wrong driveway and tried to back out, and the woman got shot. They had to drive 6 miles before they had cell phone coverage where they could get an ambulance, and she died. So this is a life and death issue in some places. And so we think it may be important to provide that option in those kinds of areas in particular. We might try and figure out some language that will work for really rural areas. But as I said, the 40% of that dollar, 40 cents out of that dollar, would either go to the PEG center in your community, and lacking that, the community could apply to a fund for that would have guidelines that really indicated the money had to go to some form of community communication.
So how can I, as a citizen, promote this bill?
Find out who your legislator is and see if they're signed on to Senate Bill 2581 or Assembly Bill 5900. We have, it looked like, when I was reading it, it looked like about 10 assembly people and 6 or 7 senators so far. I expect that to probably double in the next week or two because it's starting to gain momentum.
Well, I thank you, Tony, for providing me with that information.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is really good.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books, youth radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and beyond. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Georgia, and I'm from beyond.
And I'm Emily. I'm from Hudson, not quite beyond. But I grew up in the beyond, and we have listeners from the beyond. And...
And this week, we're going to talk about some books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And bookish things.
As usual. So hopefully that's what you're coming here for. If you're coming here for juicy goss or TV talk, then get out, girl. No, I'm kidding. Everyone's welcome here. But you're going to hear books and poems and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I might talk about a TV show. I don't think I have any juicy gossip.
Wait, could I take a guess at what you're going to talk about?
Sure.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
No, I really want to see that though.
Have you seen it? I'm not going to let myself watch it until I read the book. And so I'm going to finish the stuff I got from the book fair, then I'll read the book, and then I can watch it.
Yes. So for our listeners who don't know, maybe, there's a new movie out called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which is based on the middle grade novel by Judy Blum, which was out when I was a kid. I think it was even out. It was out when my sister was a kid. I don't remember how old it was. When was that first published? I'm going to look that up. Are You There?
If it was out when you were a kid, let's see. 2023 minus 909,028,000.
How old are you making me?
Only 9,928 or 9,009,028,000.
Oh yeah, it was published. Is this the first edition? 1970. But anyways, it's a great book, middle grade book about a young woman coming of age, and yeah, it's really good. And it's interesting because it was written so long ago. They have some versions where some things are updated a little bit so that they're not too dated.
Yeah.
Primarily when it comes to sanitary products for people who menstruate.
Yes.
Apparently back in the 1970s, there were belts involved.
What's involved?
Belts.
What?
I guess to hold them in place. I don't know. I never experienced a belt.
That is very...
of that type. And so someone reading that today would be very confused. So they've
That's
made some versions
odd.
Where they take that part out. But anyways, that is not the visual motion picture that I was going to talk about. But I do have a book I wanted to talk about, unless you want to go first. Would you like me to go first? Or would you like to go first?
I can go first. I haven't gone first
yet. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so this book I'm reading right now, it's called Edie in Between, and today I kind of just read if I'm like anxious or stressed, and I was kind of stressed today, so I read 150 pages in just like during school, not like where I wasn't supposed to, but just like at recess and study hall and stuff. So I'm almost halfway through.
And this is a book you got at the book fest, right?
Yeah, the pages are relatively long. So not relatively, but they're somewhat long. So I'm pretty proud that I've read that much. But it's such a good book. I wasn't initially, I mean, the description looked good, but the beginning of the book was not like, I was like, does it seem that interesting? But it is so good. I would totally recommend. So I'll read the description. Oh, yeah, it's Edie in Between by Laura Simpson. And the description is, it's been 1 year since Edie's mother died, but her ghost has never left. According to her grandmother, it's tradition that the dead of the Mitchell family linger with the living. It's just as much a part of Mitchell's life as brewing cordials or talking to plants. But Edie, whose pain over losing her mother is still fresh, has no interest in her family's legacy as local witches. When her mother's teenage journal tumbles into her life, her family's mystical inheritance becomes once and for all too hard to ignore. The journal takes Edie on a scavenger hunt to find objects that once belonged to her mother, each one imbued with a different memory. Every time she touches one of these talismans, it whisks her to another entry inside the journal, where she watches her teenage mom mourn, hope, and fall in love, just as Edie herself is right now doing with the magnetic Rhea. But as Edie discovers, there's a dark secret behind her family's practice that she's unwittingly released. She'll have to embrace and master the magic she's always rejected before it consumes her. So that was Edie in Between by Laura Simpson.
That sounds really good.
Great. And it's a middle grade, I'd say middle grade young adult. There are some references. I think it's meant for teens, but I think middle graders could read it. It's just, it does have some like references, but other than that, there's a tiny bit, there's some language and some references, but other than that, it's pretty appropriate, at least so far. I don't know. I'm only like halfway through, so maybe there's some inappropriate part I don't know about, but yeah. It's so good.
Does it jump back and forth between sort of her part and like the journals? Do you get to read a lot of the journal entries?
Yeah, you do.
It seems fun. I've read a lot of books where there's that kind of element, and
It
becomes this thing where it's like, if you like the present day part and then you like the journal part, and it's like you look forward to both parts.
Yeah, I like the present day more. I don't know why, but I just find, no offense to her mom, but I find her a bit more interesting than her mom. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, it's just, and usually I hate like love stories. That's like the opposite of my thing. And some of the stuff with Rhea is just a bit odd, but like, I actually love the love story with Rhea. I don't know why I usually hate them. But I don't know, there's something about it. It's just like different than most, because they're just like friends. It's not like, it's not as many. There are a few that are, but there's not as many like gross descriptions of like how they perceive the other person, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's so good though.
I have to check that one out. I think I borrowed it briefly when they announced the Bookfest authors that were coming, and then I didn't have time to read it, so I brought it back. But I do want to read it at some point.
Wait, you borrowed it from your own library?
Yeah, when the Bookfest authors first came out, I borrowed a bunch of books just to check them out and see what they looked like, what they
How do you borrow books like. From your own library?
Same way everybody else does.
That's so funny. It must be so fun to like borrow books from yourself.
Well, I don't own the library.
That's true.
They're not. I don't think of them as my books. I think of them as our books, our community's books. And then I borrow them from other libraries too, you know, because we can bring stuff in from all the other libraries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the book I wanted to talk about today is a graphic novel. I'd say it's a teen graphic novel, but I don't remember anything being inappropriate for middle grade. So I think it would be fine for middle grade as well, unless I'm forgetting something. But it is a graphic novel memoir. It is called I, Miha by Christine Suggs. And it's I, Miha. And then there's a little like subtitle thing on the cover that says My Bilingual Summer in Mexico. And so it's based on the author's experience as a teen going to Mexico for the first time by themselves. They'd been there before with their mother, but this was their first time taking a solo trip to visit her grandparents and her tia, her auntie, and eventually her mom also comes a bit later to join them. But so it's about her time connecting with her family, who she only gets to see so often, and being in a country that was her mother's home and where her parents met, and, you know, speaking in a language that she doesn't always speak when she lives in the US, and kind of revisiting places from that she remembers from previous visits, but also that she's heard about through stories from her mother, and connecting with her family, kind of getting more and more confident with her Spanish language ability as time goes by. And it is a really interesting book. And one of the things I'll say that I liked about it the most is the way they incorporated Spanish language into it. I understand why they do this, but it bothers me in kids' books and teen books, I guess, too. I don't know how much they do it in adult books. But it bothers me when there's text in Spanish, like a character says something in Spanish and then they say the exact same thing as in English. And then that's the way that the author conveys to the English language readers what has been said in Spanish. And it's like nobody is going to say it in Spanish and then in English in real life. So it just feels really forced. And I liked in this that they didn't do that. But what they do is she has like this little version of herself. So like a teeny little version. I'll show Georgia, but I know our radio listeners can't see it. So it's kind of like the idea of like a little like person on your shoulder. But so there's like a physical little person. And sometimes when she's trying to figure out what parts of, like somebody will say something in Spanish to her and you can tell that she's like trying to think of like, well, I know what that word means and I know what that word means, like trying to figure out what's being said. And her little version of herself will kind of define some of the words as she's trying to figure it out. So I thought that was an interesting way. And it's not like a word for word thing. So someone might say a whole sentence and then they're like, well, I know this is that word and this is that word. And really that's the way, if you're not fully confident or fluent in a language, that's the way you sometimes hear sentences, is that you hear a sentence and you can figure out a couple of the words and you kind of piece together what they might be saying. And so I found that interesting as a reader who has some Spanish knowledge, but I'm not anywhere near fluent, to try to like figure out what was being said as well. And yeah, it's just a nice little, has a little bit of a, not quite a road trip element, but they start off when she arrives in Mexico City, and there's like some days in Mexico City, and then they go out to a family home in the country for some time. And then in the end, they go back to Mexico City. So you get to see like a little bit of Mexico City, a little bit of the Mexican countryside outside of Mexico City. So obviously not the whole country because it's huge. And I like the family dynamics are very sweet. You get to learn a little bit about food and plants and animals. Yeah, so it's very cool.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great, I want to read that. What's it called again?
It's called Ay, Mija, My Bilingual Summer in Mexico.
Got it.
Actually, it is a newer book. So I picked this up because I'm going to be taking a trip soon to Mexico City. I thought it would be fun to read. And it was. Not just because of that, but that's part of it. So yeah, definitely suggest that. It's geared towards teens, but I think it would be appropriate for middle grade readers as well. And of course, adults, because I'm an adult and I liked it. So on a related note, the TV show that I will mention, I recently watched a fun series for teens on Netflix called La Flor Más Bella, which is a Spanish language series that there's also a dubbed version if people prefer to watch a dubbed version into English. But I watched it in Spanish with the subtitles on. But it's also set in Mexico City and is sort of a high school romantic comedy coming of age story about a young woman named Mitch who lives in an area of Mexico City called Xochimilco, where there's canals and lots of boats. It was really fun to see that aspect of Mexico. And the name of the show is La Flor Más Bella, which is like the most beautiful flower. And in Xochimilco, there's a festival, an annual festival that's sort of a, I'm not quite sure, because we haven't actually seen the festival on the show yet, and I didn't do thorough research, but I think it's sort of like a cultural beauty pageant in a way. I don't know how much the focus is on beauty, but it's connected with cultural aspects of that area. And part of the story is she wants to be an actress and be in a play, and her family wants her to continue the tradition of competing to be the La Flor Más Bella, and those things conflict with each other. And then there's some drama with other classmates and friendship drama. She gets in quite the love triangle. It's just really fun. Though we don't talk about TV on this show, as you said, or Juicy Goss. Yeah. I did think that show was worth noting as a fun teen series. And it tied in with the book that I was talking about, since it's set in Mexico City.
That sounds cool.
I also read a gigantic book about Frida Kahlo.
What's it called?
Such a big book. It was The Complete Paintings of Frida Kahlo. And
Frida Kahlo is my favorite artist.
Oh, yeah. And this book was huge. It was so heavy. It was definitely like I had to carry it home in both arms. holding it. Would not fit in any of my tote bags for sure. And
oh my gosh.
It both like, it has pretty large scale pictures of her paintings, as well as a lot of photographs and a lot of text about her, as well as things from her diary. It's like a pretty fascinating book, but it was really hard to read because it was so big.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I don't know. That must, the library that it came from, I forget which library it was. It takes up so much space. Like how many books do you have this size? It must have a lot more shelving.
Yeah.
But it was very cool.
Sounds awesome.
I'm excited to see some of her paintings in person and see her home where she grew up.
La Casa Azul.
Azul. Mm-hmm. The Blue House. Cool. But yeah, so those are my Mexico City themed suggestions for this week. I could play a song by a Mexican artist on the way out just to keep it on theme. Although it doesn't tie in with your theme. What would you do for yours? Maybe a ghost.
I say we play the Cars. I know that play sounds random, but I've been listening to the Cars really on like lowest volume on my record player the whole show. And I think the first track of Door to Door would be good.
What's the first track?
Let me check. Leave or Stay.
Okay. We'll make it happen.
Thank you.
All right. So we're just about out of time for today, but we hope everyone out there listening has a great week filled with lots of quality reading.